This is Steve Sherlock with another internet radio show or podcast number 168 in the series for Franklin Matters. This recording shares the Joint Budget Subcommittee meeting held on Wednesday, July 24, 2019. The Joint Budget Subcommittee is comprised of members of the Town Council, School Committee, and Finance Committee, and is supported by members of the Town Administration as well as the School District Central Office. If you recall, plans started for an override to be put before the voters for the FY 2021 budget at the meeting held in June. This meeting picks up and provides some updates on events since the June meeting. The audio recording of the June meeting is linked in the show notes. One of the updates is for the Legislative Conference Committee, which finally submitted their budget to the governor, who has 10 days to review, modify, and improve the whole or parts thereof of the state budget. What went to the governor is looking good for Franklin's budget situation, given the word from President Spilka and Representative Roy. Both of their letters were shared here earlier, and the links are provided below. Town Administrator Jamie Helene and School Superintendent Sarah Ahern jointly authored a memo to the governor and Lieutenant Governor regarding Franklin's interest in the FY20 budget. A copy of that memo was attached. Town Administrator Jamie Helene also walked through an abridged version of the five-year fiscal forecast for Franklin during the meeting, and a copy of that memo is also attached. There will be an open planning session on September 11th at the Senior Center at 6:30. Additional details will be included as that announcement comes out. So without further ado, here is the audio recording of the meeting of July 23rd. It runs approximately 45 minutes.
So thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to go through quickly, everybody should have a packet. I think Chrissy just handed them out in case you need some stuff. You don't have to sit in the nosebleeds or the bleachers. If you want to, you can't. So really quickly, I thought this meeting actually ended up being quite timely. Some of the folks maybe heard this the other night in the school committee, but while we're being recorded, a quick update on the state budget. I think most of us got an email from Representative Roy as well as Senator Spilka this week. Regarding the state budget, as everybody maybe saw in the press, the legislature put out its conference committee budget and sent the budget on Monday evening to the governor. There's a lot of good news in it, and I'll temper some of that in a moment, but at the end of the day, our folks were successful in having the final budget from the legislature take the Senate version. Well, not only the charter school reimbursement formula, but also the local number, which, I know all of our representatives and senators were advocating hard for that. And I'd be remiss, I know Representative Roy did, he caught me somewhere at the Senior Center and said he marched right into the speaker's office and said this is something that has to happen. But I'd be remiss if I didn't certainly acknowledge Senator Spilka's role in this. It's no question that she certainly put a lot of her political capital at stake for not only the town of Franklin in terms of the charter school reimbursement formula, as well as the numbers, but also the local aid number, which did increase across the board for the whole state. Which is all good news. So I don't want to sour anything. Good news. But the former legislative staffer in me knows the process is far from over. For those that are inquiring, the governor now has 10 days to make any vetoes or any adjustments. There's a certain confines of what he can do, but he certainly could still veto or amend the language that's in the final conference committee budget. That will, I think his 10 days are up on August 2nd or 3rd. And so really we'll know finally, I think in about a week and a half, what that number ends up to be. If he does nothing to it, that's the final budget from the state this year, which would really result in about a little less than $1 million. it's not really a big plus, but really, you know, keep our budget basically still balanced that the council approved in that. So it was more of a damage control, I think, more than really a huge benefit. But nonetheless, from a policy perspective, there's no question that that's very promising for the town. So when we finally get any of those final messages, hopefully in a week and a half, you know, we'll be sure to communicate with everybody and let everybody know how that turns out. If the governor does veto or amend the language, what then is required is a legislative override, which requires a two-thirds of both the Senate and the House to override the governor's amendments and vetoes, or reductions in the line item, or language changes. I would not expect that override to occur if it was, you know, just a guess based on past practice and precedent, but they're certainly not going to rush back in August and do this. I would expect that to be more later in September, maybe even October. So for a lot of reasons, we hope that the governor does not certainly make any adjustments to anything, quite frankly, in the final budget on education. To that point, in the packet that was in the handouts that were there, you can take this home, but to that point a minute ago, the superintendent and I certainly found it something that we needed to do immediately, which was write a letter on behalf of the town to the governor and lieutenant governor right away, making sure that the administration is very clear of what this means to the town of Franklin. We certainly advocated for a few other things I'll go forth in a minute, but you know, that's the big one, is the charter school and the local aid numbers. And we got that letter out today, and we sent it around by email to everybody in the administration as well as our legislators. And so hopefully our advocacy shows some results by the governor not tweaking or amending any of that language. Couple of other notable points that the our legislators were able to get in the budget was $100,000 for a parking lot down at Franklin State Forest. Really, that's intended to go at the end of Beaver and Grove. There's a lot of public safety issues down there. People park on the road. We're unclear in the future what's going to happen with the SNET trail piece that goes all the way up to Grove. And so I know the superintendent of Franklin State Forest has been asking for years for funding. So give Jeff Roy a lot of credit on that. I know he was the lead on this, so we appreciate him for that, which will give a lot of our residents more access to the state forest. $58,000 was another local appropriation for the Substance Abuse Task Force, which I think in the past has not has needed some of that funding. Senator Rausch was the lead advocate this year, and a $50,000 appropriation to the town for the Franklin Public School District for a vaping prevention program, which is certainly well needed. Additionally, $50,000 for the Safe Coalition, which I think this is the fourth or fifth year that they've been able to get funding for them, doing great work, and $25,000 for the Franklin Downtown Partnership. Anybody has any questions relative to the state budget, how it affects us, how it doesn't, you know, might be a good time now to be able to answer any of those. Moving forward, based on the last meeting that we had, it seemed the consensus of the group, and this is the third handout I gave out, the five-year fiscal forecast abridged version. I was asked to provide a much shorter version than the, I know 10 pages is a lot to read. It's a lot of numbers and it makes your head spin. The superintendent, you know, this is really, I mean, I do want to say that the schools did add a little bit in here, and I did ask them to review it, so this reflects in their comments too, but there really isn't anything new in this two-pager that wasn't already pretty much in the fiscal forecast that we put out before. But, you know, I hope this synthesizes things a little bit. You know, obviously, we have to wait for the state budget to play out. We have to wait for, really, to close the books is really at the tax rate hearing in November, after we've had a chance to go through new growth and a whole variety of other fiscal procedures that we normally do. In short, I put in boldface print here a couple of items that I, you know, it is what it is. You know, I could come and continually repackage all of this material in any way that anybody would like me to. It doesn't take away the takeaway message that we all know. we operate under. Put there in the second bullet point. If you don't want to read the two pages, at least read the bold-faced stuff. at least those two or three sentences are really, really important. But also, one of the newer parts of this is, I think Chairman Padula and the councilors also asked for, you know, how do we get here? There are a lot of factors. I can't do that in a page or two. There's just a lot of stuff that goes into this. And so what I did was put in here some of the major ones that are certainly driving this issue. I think in truth, the real big one is just the demand and service, if you look at the list that we have here. I mean, we've got numbers, and you know, as this process unfolds, I have no doubt that we'll be putting together more metrics. The police department certainly knows how many calls they've had increased, how many calls for service, the fire department, the paramedics, the DPW is mowing more fields, they're taking care of more roads, more sidewalks. Their customer service is excellent. Every time anybody asks them to do anything, we do the best we can to respond. And I know the school district is seeing the same thing. The expectations of public education are more, more, more. It's not wait five more years, but it's immediate, as it should be. The expectations of public education. I just think at the end of the day, there's just more building permits, there's just more staff needed. Yes, there's more tax, bills to send out. I mean, you just look at everything. The population is increasing in town, and just by default, you have more dogs to register. You just have more of everything, and we're a busy organization. It's a good problem to have, but with that comes expense. The call for service is certainly it. Healthcare, I don't think I need to go through anymore. Everybody in this room has heard it. I hope everybody in America has heard it. It's just the thing that happens. I mean, as I point out in the memo, Miriam and I, we go into healthcare negotiations every year. Right, Miriam, we budget probably 5-7% pretty conservatively. I mean, sometimes we get proposals for 13-14%. We work with our IAC to do that. All you have to do is do the math when you can only raise revenue 2.5% under Prop 2.5, and your costs are going up 6, something's got to budge somewhere else. And so healthcare is certainly one of the biggest drivers of that. Staff retainment, recruitment, I think the schools and us are seeing the same issue. We're having a lot of retirements. We had another resignation today from our DPW. Someone we just got in and has been a great employee for 8 months. But got another job somewhere else, paid more money. It's just, I don't know how else to put it. It's just the way it is. Costs for staff, retainment, and recruitment are just not going down. It's a great economy. If we're going to maintain the folks that we have and that we want to actually attract to come here, we got to pay. Capital needs, I have a list at the bottom. We talk about OPEB and pension liability and the new police station, the schools. Capital plan, all the stuff that we know in town, as any builder knows or any realtor knows, it's not getting cheaper to build anything. Plumbing, it's a seller's market, name your price. If you want the work done in your house, you gotta pay the rate or at least pay cash to try to get a little bit of a deal. The one I think that a lot of people, and I made this argument in the Metro West Daily News a couple months ago when I did a feature story on the town's budget issues. State aid is leveled off. For folks that have been here a long time, they know the good old days in the 80s and 90s when Chapter 70 median income in town was low or modest. It was a working class community. And property values were very low. And because of the amount of building that was happening in the community at the time, the Chapter 70 number was off the charts. The reality is the town of Franklin is becoming a more affluent community. I know sometimes we want to admit it, we don't want to admit it, it's working class, but the truth is, it's just a more affluent community. As a result, based on the Chapter 70 formula, it's not a reflection on our legislators at all, it's a reflection on our status as a community. And the fact is, the Chapter 70 has just leveled off, despite the big building booms that we're still seeing. I can't not put the charter school funding formula issue on here, as we've said a million times over, it really has nothing to do with the Benjamin Franklin Charter School in town. It has to do with the state formula, and until those folks up there, do something about this. We've discussed this internally. I think I might have said it before. before, but, you know, the big bump that we saw this year in the additional money going to the charter school due to their expansion is a big jump, you know, 1.1 million-ish. You know, over the next 5-6 years, whatever the number of years are, 4 years, you know, that number will continue to grow as the charter school fills its seats. But that number will level off into a new normal at some point. And I think, you know, we've talked internally, at least a little bit, maybe publicly, it's probably going to get to 5.7 million, 5.8. I mean, you guys can maybe have a better number. But I think at some point it's going to get to another new normal where, you know, for many years, it was just $4 million out of our budget every year, and the town just worked around it. It's just going to go up another big steep increase like this year, and then eventually it'll just level off into what it becomes. And finally, you know, on my list is population increase. You know, it feels like when you look back, you know, 15, 18 years, and you were 30,000 and 5,000 more people in town, where the current population is about, estimated by the town clerk, doesn't feel like a lot more people. But the trend, as you can see from my memo, you know, the inequity there is we've seen that while the population has gone this way, the school population has gone this way. And so that's just another big factor in the entire budget part of it. So, you know, there's a lot more to unpackage. I mean, I could probably do a list 5 pages long of why we're here, but I think those are the big ones as to, you know, why the town is in the position it's in. You know, I kind of added at the bottom here a scare tactics list. I do this on our capital memo every year. I, you know, for those of you that have been on the capital committee for many years, you know, it's always just a good reminder that we're not operating in a vacuum. There are a lot of other things out there that certainly need attention in the community. And this is just a short list of stuff that I know are in the, you know, seven digits in the millions. That we hear certainly a lot from the public about a lot of these issues, particularly the roads, you know, and the EPA stormwater permit at some point is going to come onto us. We're doing a study now for what that fee will look like. That will probably be ready by the end of the year. It'll be very modest, but at some point, you know, we're 5 or 6 years ahead of where the permit needs to be. But that's really due to a lot of the work that Brutus, the DPW, and Jeff did for a lot of years to stay ahead of that. I think at one point it was estimated that it would be about $60 to $70 million to implement it just in the town alone over 20 years. So it's just another little thing that we have to kind of stay on top of in addition to the water sewer rates. And you know, some of these other things like open space we hear about constantly from folks in town. It's the right message, but without a dedicated revenue source, you know, it's tough to be able to prepare for some of those issues as well. So. Yeah, that's maybe it in a nutshell. Happy to answer any questions. I hope this does a little bit of what folks had asked for. It maybe helps, you know, some of you, you know, be able to kind of get out to the community and start feeling out, you know, where the community is at, you know, on the override question. So happy to answer anything. I don't know if the superintendent had any comments, but.
Do you want to add anything before questions?
I can add a few pieces as it relates to the schools. In terms of the charter school tuition assessment increasing and then leveling off, I want to make mention that the reimbursement that the state puts into the budget that Jamie referenced, what we both referenced in the letter to the governor, that's the area of potential increase. Than the numbers we've been working with this spring to build the budget, but that's temporary. So their reimbursement schedule is a 3-year schedule, and so that reimbursement from the state would be expected to go down in year two and year three to 60% and then 40%. So that's kind of a temporary component. But I agree with what Jamie's overall piece is. In the long term, there will be kind of a new normal related to what the charter assessment tuition assessment would end up being. And I think it's important, one of the things that I want to kind of note about the population decrease as it relates to the school population is, you know, the numbers don't wash out evenly when you have a reduction in school population that you're able to cut your costs proportionately based on a decrease in enrollment, and some people, I think, have that expectation. But you may see a class go from 24 to 22, and you've just reduced two students in that class, but you still need the teacher, and you still need the nurse, and you still need the counselor. And so with a decrease in population, it doesn't always allow for a decrease in costs, yet your state aid or the income that you're taking in for the number of students that you have is going down. And I just want to make mention of that, because it's not, in the aggregate, it seems like it would be simple that your costs would go down, but spread out across the schools and the classrooms, it doesn't shake out that way. And then another thing that we've been talking about that I think is rather in capital needs, capital costs, that I just want to kind of hang a sign on very specifically is the cost of technology and a recognition that we have an investment in technology, we have a technologically rich infrastructure that needs to be supported, maintained, replaced. And so that is certainly in our minds from a school department standpoint, whether it's instructional technology or supportive technology, that is a big area of capital costs that we would anticipate going forward. And I just want to kind of specifically call that out. And I know that you're aware, but also just want to make mention of it. Happy to answer any questions.
I mean, before we go to questions, it's important, I think, that the decrease in population, we educate people properly. Because as soon as they hear decrease in population, they're going to think automatically think decrease in budget. And while we're pushing the limit to some of the kids in the classroom now, I think we all know that, right? I mean, we're worried about how many bodies are in the rooms. Mm-hmm. I think it's real important to educate them that while there may be a reduction in one piece, wouldn't it be nice to be where we really feel comfortable instead of having to choke down five or six or seven more students.
Yeah.
Whatever the number. Two students is a lot of students extra to have.
Thank you. And you're reminding me, too, just in terms of the needs of the students increasing, more complex needs are being experienced within our classrooms and more support being required for those children. No, thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Questions of Jamie or the superintendent? Please go ahead.
So, I have a question about the increased fees that for Franklin Public Schools parents with respect to paying more for busing and more for athletic fees and the new charge for the high school. I assume that there are increases in expenses for busing and athletics. I wonder if the schools could tell us where the increased expenses are in essentially a brand new parking lot that requires high school parents to have to pay for the kids to park there now. What are the additional expenses that we need to pay for that parking lot for the privilege to park there?
So I think in terms of the parking fee, it's part of the budget reduction strategy to spread out how we were going to get a reduction in our budget of about $2.2 million, looking at reducing services, reducing positions, and then on the flip side, increasing the monies that the school department is taking in. All of this was done and proposed very reluctantly. The athletic fees and the bus fees were examined in regards to kind of a 10-year history, and increases hadn't been experienced across the 10 years, and expenses have gone up within those 10 years, and so there were proposals to increase fees there. In terms of the parking fee, we examined the fee structures that are unfortunately assessed in other school departments and in other towns, and saw that many of our colleagues in other districts applied a parking fee towards ongoing maintenance of the lots, which would include snow removal, painting, signage, and so we would look to apply fees related to ongoing maintenance, which is something that we had not been collecting for. Again, most reluctantly, we don't see that as something that it was made most reluctantly.
Isn't parking and maintenance covered under the DPW budget, though?
Yes. And so there have been conversations between my office and both Jeff Nutting this past spring, and then as town administration to work out the relationship around which those fees could be applied towards the ongoing maintenance. We're still working out some of those details as it's a new structure.
Please call. I think the superintendent laid it out there quite eloquently in the sense that nobody likes fees. It's not our, you know, in our jurisdiction necessarily on this side. These guys set the fees for the rest of the organization. But I think to the superintendent's point, we can get into the weeds on it, but it's either cuts, taxes, or fees. And I'm not trying to be extraordinarily inflammatory about it. I'm just simply saying that I've certainly gotten my own set of feedback from residents recently about the fees. It's all unpopular. I can recall when I worked in state government, you know, years ago, it's the same debate. You know, you either want services, you don't, and how do you pay for them, and what's the fairest way? I could certainly make an argument pretty clearly that $150 on your property tax bill is going to get a better bang for your buck and a lot more service level than a fee. But I think this is a conversation this community has to have over the next couple of years about how you're going to raise that revenue or where you're going to see the reductions in service levels, whether it's roads, teachers, you know, expenses, buildings, facilities, no open space, you know, whatever that conversation is. So, I mean, I think that that's something that, you know, I hope a lot more folks are, when they get the fee assessment or however it's done in the mail for your athletic fee or your parking fee, I hope those folks also participate throughout the next couple of years in this debate, because if you were going to raise property taxes $150, you'd be getting a lot more service for your dollar than what you perceive as a fee, just parking a kid's car in the parking lot or pay for the uniforms. And those are hard conversations to have. They're not easy. It's people's quality of life. It's their money. We do the best we can to work within what the citizens give us. I think we all do an excellent job at that. I think our staff does an excellent job at that. I think the school district does a great job at that. That's what this memo is partly designed, I think, when they asked me to do a shorter version to get to that point. But I think for the community at large, and for those of you that listen to the tape that Steve puts online afterwards, you know, you can't just get the bill in the mail and then just get angry. You can, but it ain't going to really be a productive conversation, because if I asked a lot of those people, would you want to raise your property taxes $150 and get X, Y, and Z more services, they probably might still be angry. And I think that we're all trying to do the best we can within the budget year we work, Kit, given the charter school issue that came on and some of the other factors that are labeled here. And so I hope maybe some of this starts to engage more people into what those options and choices are, because these are all, as the superintendent pointed out, these discussions don't go lightly at all, as everybody's heads are nodding. As the folks that got to take the votes, all the folks here, you know, we went through the fees bylaw a couple years ago. You know, we went through the whole thing, got rid of a lot, increased some. We had a long debate about all of those fees that we were charging people for various levels of services, and it's just, you know, it's not an easy conversation. So
I didn't think I was getting Bill and getting angry. I just thought I was trying to get why I had
not. I'm doing it for the mic.
I think that was a reasonable question to say, yeah. Why I have a new fee. Can you explain to me why, yeah, where that's going? I think that was like I felt like I got angry.
No. I'm just framing the debate. Options.
Questions, comments, anybody? Questions for the superintendent? How are we doing on the message? Any message?
I guess we're starting to put some names together to start a grassroots group. Start discussions at that point as to how should proceed, and, you know, building the team to put the message out there. Obviously, there's only so much that Jamie and Sarah can do. They're restricted, for sure. And there's only so much elected officials can do. But we can certainly present the message as to where we are, basically. You know, what you're seeing here is basically the message. And how does the community want to deal with these shortcomings that we have moving forward? The schools had a any 10 names. We had a few names to put together, and we're just kind of getting started with building that grassroots group and then go from there. So that's an early in September meeting and discussion, and again, it's nothing more than getting the message out to a group of people in the community and see what the feeling is and see how they would like to see us proceed as leaders of the community.
You see, it's something like what happened when the schools put more money together for the schools, something similar to that.
I would say that you're, you know, everybody's, you know, afraid to say the word. Nobody likes to say the word over, but at some point, that is the question that will be asked of the community, and it's not our decision to make. It's our decision to give the community the decision to make as to do you want a reduction in services or and cuts, or do you want an override and provide the same level of services? And again, ultimately, it's a townwide decision. And they'll be the ultimate deciders of this, but I think it's this group's job to give the community the correct information to make a wise decision when they go into, when they make the decision whether to vote for an override or not vote for an override. And we, as a subcommittee group of the community, it's our job to give them that information. Basically, it's what James put in a short file here. We need to get that message to the community and then ask, it'll be the community's decision whether that's the direction they want to go.
Jamie, go ahead.
Just make one more quick comment, sure. I think, you know, what's here defines, I think, to Councilor Mercer's point, defines part of the problem. It's not the whole thing. I know the appetite will be there from a lot of folks to say, well, how much? What are we buying for? What do we lose? You know, I mean, in all fairness to all of you, too, and all of the elected officials in town boards and committees, we can't really, in good earnest, financially start putting that out there because there's too many other factors and dominoes that need to fall before you can get to that point. Based on the fiscal forecast and the models that we had presented at the last meeting and that we had worked through, you know, through the regular budget process, I think, you know, these are estimates. It's in the memo, you know, about $4 to $5 million override. That's what I talked about in the newspaper a couple months ago. That's based on a series of assumptions. Putting more roads money into the budget. I think it was assuming a $3 million increase for the school. I mean, there's a lot of different factors in that number. But we don't really close out the books until a little later in the fall, if you will. And I urge for a little while, which is everybody can, to, you know, it's not, I've put enough here of what we can do up until now. And and how an override gets split up and where the money goes and how it gets spent, what do you get, what do you lose, are just for right now, those are questions, you know, I can only theorize with. And I think when you're going out there for this kind of question, is, as everybody pointed out about the override, you know, I think for everybody, it's doing a disservice to the public to put out hypothetical scenarios. You know, I think at this point, I think it's also dangerous. I think you're moving the needle too much, and, you know, the council at some point has to have a deliberation about what that vote's going to be. The school committee and the various subcommittees are going to have their own process to go through with what their needs are and where their focuses and priorities are. And I think both groups, too, and the community at large are going to have to decide, you know, where those reductions would be if this doesn't pass in the next couple of years, or what is sacrificed, if you will, at some point. And I think, you know, in the middle of July, it's really, really, it's not a great idea to start putting all that kind of information out there. So I certainly hesitated from doing that, even though I know and I respect the fact that a lot of your constituents and a lot of our constituents, you know, probably want that answer like now, right, to evaluate whether they're in or out or where they stand. But, this is probably the best information you can get for a little while, until we have an opportunity for the state budget process to final out, until we get the final new growth numbers from the assessors. And there's a series of other things that we need to go through. You know, I don't want to bore everybody with too many financial procedures, but, you know, really until, I think, November, you know, until you set the tax rate, that's really when it all kind of closes out. And we'll have a better idea through the fall what those numbers might be, but, I'd be hesitant to get out there, you know, a pie chart saying this is what we're going to go for and this is what, you know, might be on the chopping block. I think you gotta wait a few more months for that, for the rest of the year to final.
Just to follow up with what Jamie said, and again, that's why we're talking about a grassroots group getting together early in September. Just talk, just to see what the interest is, what community people are interested in going out and talking about this to the rest of the community. So, as Jamie said, we're not gonna know any kind of numbers until, you know, late November or, you know, maybe even into early December. These are not any dates that are cast in stone, but, you know, I don't think we'd be talking about it at a council level as far as putting something on a ballot or putting a ballot question out there before January at the earliest. And, you know, and if that were the case, you'd be looking at, you know, May or June before it would come to a townwide vote. But again, there's a lot of work that has to be done before we get to that point. And this meeting in early December, certainly anybody is welcome to attend. And again, it's September 11th at the Senior Center at 6 o'clock. And again, it's just a meeting getting some community leaders together to just talk about the financial situation that the town is in and will be in the coming year or two, and to start the process. Again, we're very early in the stages, but to do the job right, as I see our job as community leaders, is to get the information out there, get it out as soon as possible, and as factual as possible. And that's what Jamie was alluding to. We don't have a lot of facts. We have some generalities at this point. But that doesn't mean we can't begin the process and start talking in generalities. So
the
Thank you. So this meeting was called to try to make sure we keep the momentum going on what we want to try to do with this piece. And we're going to have better figures in late November, and I think it's important, and I think we're all, hopefully our constituents will see, it's not just an issue with the schools, it's an issue townwide. But I will say that even though we're not going to know where our numbers are, the school knows what they need for numbers now. Those numbers aren't going to change much. They're going to actually, because of the demands, they're going to go up. So I suspect that with pretty good accuracy, they're going to tell us what they need nowish. I don't know, they have to wait till November for them to tell me where their numbers are at. Sort, you know, I mean, I think they can be pretty accurate. So, and some of our other numbers, I get it, it's moving, but we're not going to come up with a pie chart tomorrow. But I think this is why, if that meeting is now scheduled for 9/11, that's important. This is more momentum to keep that going forward as we kind of shake the bushes and see where the support's going to come from to educate the people. That's what we're doing. Just like we educate them when the school is being built. Although the last building was in good shape, we just didn't maintain it. It was said by Johnny, who was on this original school committee, because the Tri-County was built in around the same time and maintained, but our other building was not. We're just very fortunate that things lined up and our legislative time came up with an awful lot of money for us. So it worked out well.
The status
almost happened. Any other questions? Any other comments? Any suggestions of meeting before the, we got a 9/11 meeting coming up, so suggest a meeting before then, or you think the 9/11 meeting is going to be appropriate?
I think that that would be, I don't see a need prior to that. I would urge this group, not that we're looking for any one of you or us to be an integral part of this grassroots groups that we're trying to put together, but I think it would be very informational for anybody here that would like to attend that. Please, please come. You know, we're reaching out to other community leaders to get them involved, people that want to be involved, and see where it goes from there. And then, I think then after that, Peter, you have a good idea of when to get this group together again.
Comments? Anything else come before the committee? Entertain a motion to adjourn.
No,
you have something with that?
We had talked in one of the first meetings about the day to stay at school. I know it's a sore subject. About closing the school. And we, I would like to have, for the next meeting here, the number of students in the day to stay at school and the number of teachers and specialty teachers. And what it would be for the town, what would we save by closing that school? I know it involves redistricting, and I've been on redistricting committees, and I know it's a burrow for the bitch. It really is. But it needs to be done. I mean, if we're getting some classes that have 13 kids in a class, that really bothers me when I hear that on the outside, okay? And I'd like to be told that I'm wrong as far as that goes. But let's get those numbers together, too, so that we would be able to see what we would save by closing the Davis there. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Anything else? Entertain a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second, seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Any abstentions? Motion's adjourned.
This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin. But I can't do it alone. I can always use your help. How can you help? In particular, if you have an interest in real estate, zoning, or construction, I would like someone to help us by following the Planning Board, Zoning Board of Appeals, and/or the Conservation Commission meetings. I'll provide the guidance on note-taking and sharing. You'll need to bring an inquisitive, open mind, and a willingness to learn and share. Overall, in any case, if you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like this, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements, and I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy.